It's always hard to come back after a guest episode without a guest, and it's just us. I feel like it might be a letdown, especially where we got so much good feedback on Bo's episode. That was a really good one.
Yeah, Bo is awesome. I think that's stuff people are really interested in, and Bo did a great job. So hopefully people are flossing their teeth and doing their core.
Yes. I want to shout out Sean Worthlin, who I know will listen to this. I don't think he has missed a secret password yet. Well, he hits me every single time.
Good for him.
Like more reliably than just, I think he and Josh are two of our most reliable listeners. Wanted to shout those guys out. Before anything else, we always talk about how much we love to see Maybird racers traveling out and doing cool stuff. And we had some Maybird racers representing up north in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Which was really, really cool. I want to start with that.
It looked like, I saw some pictures from out there. It looked really, really muddy, really, really wet.
Wisconsin's not a place you think about. It's also cool that there is mountain bike racing up there, because that's not a place you think about as being mountain bike. Like the Midwest isn't mountain bikey in my mind. Yeah, so it's cool that you get that out there.
It's not really mountain bikey, but it's still riding a mountain bike on different terrain and you know, it looked like fun.
So who all was out there?
I think it's in like a sod farm or something that they
Oh, really?
Yeah. But yeah, Ainsley Haas and Miles Crockett and Pepper Smith all went out there and were racing for us. So yeah, it's awesome they were out there and made the journey and got to experience that. So
very, very cool. I will say to parents, like it's not, it's funny because we've kind of said that like we live in the place that kind of has the best mountain biking already. So it's sort of hard to like pay all the money to travel to another place. But I will say there's something to be said for like the experience of going to a new place with your friends to do a bike race. Mm-hmm. There's something about that that's really cool. So if you have the opportunity and you should do it a few times.
There's some programs that's all they're based on, built on. Like that's the only thing they do is go race in other states and they don't do anything aside from that. But we're Maybird, we do a whole lot of other stuff, and that's something we dabble in just so people can experience it.
Because there's no way the quality of the mountain biking on a sod farm in Wisconsin is higher, but doing kind of weird stuff like that from time to time is something that you should do occasionally. I agree that I don't think, which is why
I think all our cyclocross races are on basically like sod farms.
I mean, kind of. Is it too early to start talking about cross? It's way too early to start talking about cross. But anyway.
So yeah, way to go to those guys. That's awesome. They survived the weather and yesterday was a big day.
Yesterday was a big day. This is the big one. We're recording this post CCP2P, and you have to start with the attendance. That was crazy. And this is like, so I should say, this isn't like a thing that it's a hard enough thing that like most of the team isn't ready for it. So we kind of have in the past have been like, we're going to extend this to a small subset of the team that can handle it.
So I used to put it on our whole main team snap as an invite, and like, you know, people would show up, but the team's getting so big that the challenge with this event is there's not a whole lot of parents and coaches that could lead a group start to finish and be able to keep up. And, you know, it's just hard to get, like we have way more riders than we have coaches that are wanting to do this. So we really, it's difficult. We kind of have to manage crowd size. So we only invited basically like our ambassadors and our pink boys, pink girls, black diamond girls, you know, just kind of our top groups. But but just out of those groups alone, we probably had at least 60 plus, maybe 70 people. I know like I rode with the girls groups, and I think there were two girls groups that both had about 20, 25 people in them. And then we had, you know, another group and another group of guys, like two other groups of guys that were pretty big too. So huge crowd. It was an event for sure.
Yeah. So it was really cool. And I'll say too, that like, it's not as hard as Park City point to point. Park City point to point is harder,
but this early in the season,
oh man,
most people aren't ready for something like that this early in the season.
Well, and so like I did True Grit a few weeks ago and had a really good day. Like I kind of thought I was ready for it. And yes, like I didn't finish yesterday. I got through.
I thought True Grit felt way easier.
Yeah. I got through about two thirds of it, and it was two thirds of it was harder than True Grit. Right. It's so I want to say like, if you finished that yesterday, Bravo. That's amazing. Like, that's a big, fat, gnarly ride.
You know, I got a ride with, we had two separate girl groups and they're too big to combine, but they rode it fairly close together. You know, like one group would get to the aid stations about 5 minutes ahead of the other. And, the group I was with, like in the morning, they were just so funny and they were like talking really loud and screaming and just having so much fun and just partying and just making it just so much fun. And, as the day went on and we were on back on that Lehigh side where you're just like
it's going up slog.
It's a like massive switchbacks and just cooking in the sun. There wasn't quite as much silliness and screaming and partying going on. But the thing with these rides is like, well, a couple of things. One is when you do these rides, like you have these moments where it's just dark and you feel like you can't finish and you just can't imagine finishing. And then an hour later you could be feeling fine. And it's just, sometimes you just kind of have to expect that, you know, that sometimes it's going to get dark, but then you're probably going to feel better later. And then I think a lot of kids discovered the importance of fueling. I just want to shout out Ken Montague.
Ken Montague is the MVP of yesterday.
Yeah.
Like
I called him after and I almost started crying when I was talking to him. I was so grateful.
It's not unusual for you, but
I was just so grateful for what he did because so many kids just had an amazing experience. Like the kids that finish it, it's kind of a life changing experience. Cause for some of them, it's the first time they've ever done something that stupid, you know, and it just gives so much confidence and it would be absolutely impossible to do that without what Ken did.
You couldn't go out and do this on your own. There's no way. You couldn't carry the amount of stuff you need. You couldn't carry the amount of water you'd need.
Yeah. There's no way you could do this self-supported.
No. And supporting, like that was basically an event. He was supporting single-handedly too.
And he was driving from feed station to feed station, keeping track of five different groups.
Well, realistically 15 different groups. Like it splintered pretty badly. Like,
yeah,
I don't know how he did it.
Somehow he managed to do it.
And
but it was just, the girls I rode with were just so strong. And so it was just inspiring to see their awesome attitudes, their determination. We had one girl that was, you know, she had really, really good Nike results last year, lost a lot of fitness over the winter, but it's really trying to get back. And she promised herself she was going to finish. And she was always, she was never that far behind the group, but she was always just a little bit behind the group the whole ride. But as the ride progressed, her determination just increased. And, you know, there were several different plate times where you could bail out and go back home. And I checked with her every time and she's like, nope, I'm good. And she finished strong and really, really happy. Like you could just tell how happy she was when she was doing that final descent down Jacob's Ladder. And then the one that really surprised me, and I know she's not listening, is my daughter, Amy. I made sure she drove her own car so she could bail out early. And I kind of thought, you know, she might just come and ride till the first aid station and have fun with her friends and then take off, you know, but I think her friends just encouraged her to finish. And I didn't think she was capable of that. She's never done anything close to this. And it was funny at the very, very end, like on the last climb, I started cramping. And so I went to the back of the group and I'd ride a little bit. When I'd start to cramp, I'd stretch and she gets to the top before I did. And I start getting these texts, which I can read on my head unit. They're like, you got this, Dan, and dig deep, go. I'm like, oh my gosh. So I kind of feel like I had to finish or else I would have felt pretty bad about it. But so I was excited that she was able to finish. So super cool day. I'm tired. I feel like I need a hospital bed. I'm not in the greatest shape right now. And it felt a lot harder this year than last year.
You need to get Jacob to hook you up with an IV.
I think I need it. So,
but that was a cool day. I'm going to take another crack at yesterday. I had a rough day. It wasn't great for me, but that's okay. I have a question.
Oh, wait, and then Mesa Verde is coming up.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Which the crazy thing is...
you already know about if you're doing.
But. Yeah. Like, a lot of the people that rode yesterday are also doing Mesa Verde. So to those people, I say...
make sure you get some rest in.
The only thing you need to worry about this week is recovering.
Yes.
So, but that's always a cool event. I'm super excited for that. It's basically more of a party than a race, in my opinion. It's something that... it's like people don't take it too seriously, but perform really, really well at it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's one of those things where there's a party vibe, but you also just, if you're the kind of person that's going to do something like that, you are competitive, whether or not it's like just cool like to admit that.
It's just like a fun fast kind of like, you know, and people do really well at it. So super excited about that. So I'm going to feel about this tired next week because I'm doing the 12 hours solo, and so we have a lot of riders that are, and I'm excited because hopefully I get to ride with them. But it's one of those events where about a quarter of the people there are Maybird. So.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Wish I was going to that too. If you aren't doing that this year, put it on the docket for next year. It's really, really cool. I do have a question from Josh. And this is an interesting one. Does rider weight matter more than bike weight? If I want to go a little faster on long training rides, should I drink out of my pack or bike bottles first? This is an interesting one. My thought on this, Dan, is... well, let's start with the first question. Does rider weight or bike weight matter? There's a joke at bike shops that you'll get a guy coming in who's like a 60-year-old dentist who... buys a $15,000 Dogma F and he is special ordering titanium brake rotor bolts from Germany to save 2 grams. And the joke is that you could probably make 2 small changes in your diet and maybe run a little bit of a calorie deficit for a few weeks and you could save 8 grand worth of weight off of your body for the adults listening. Like, and then the joke is that it's much funner and easier to just like buy, you know, like tiny incremental changes to get your bike from 15.2 pounds to 15.18 pounds or whatever. So like truthfully, and especially for the adults listening, like rider weight is much, 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 much easier to decrease than bike weight. But to his question about like pack versus...
Much cheaper.
Yes, we should say much cheaper.
It's definitely not easier.
Yeah.
Depending on...
yeah. Okay. Well, actually it kind of is easier because like, give me all the money in the world, I can't take 10 pounds off either of my bikes, right? I'm, you know, kind of in my early, like in my mid, I'm not in my early 20s anymore. That sucks. Woof. Okay. I'm having like a mid 20s crisis here, but I'm sort of at like the point where I'm like, yeah, I could probably lose some weight off my body much easier than off my bike too. So that's like with more effort, but again, I couldn't take 10 pounds off either of my bikes. So to his more direct question though about bottles versus
can I just say something there too?
Yes, please.
Maybe I'm jumping ahead, but I don't think it's, in a way it's the same, but it's not, because like the weight you're carrying on your body.
Yeah.
I don't know if you were going here.
This is where I was going. It's like, yes, you are a system. Your body. It's like,
you get used to carrying that.
Right.
You know, like, it's just kind of part of you and your body kind of adapts, gets stronger, I guess, to be able to handle that weight. So I think like adding water, like saying you're carrying a big, huge backpack versus putting it on your bike. I almost think that backpack is about the same as putting on your bike because it's something that your body's not accustomed to.
That is the case. So this is the difference that you got to like if we say like a pack versus like, cause it's maybe roughly the same amount of water, like 2 standard bottles in your bike. He rides an Epic like me. So he gets 2 bottles in there. Versus the pack, it's like, sure, maybe if we're a physics student doing an equation, like it's the same. It's part of your system weight, looking at your watts per kilo, no. But in terms of like comfort, and then I think comfort, the kind of mental side, and then your handling too, is the other thing I wanted to throw out. That like putting, especially if where your bottles are kind of lower down on your bike, like that is going to, you are not going to be negatively impacted by having that there, like descending and stuff, climbing, it's not going to make a difference. Having a big old wad of water, of really heavy water on your back, really high up on your system, isn't great either. Now, there's some rides where you just need it. Like there's some rides where you need 2 bottles, that you need as much water as you can carry, so you take both. But yeah, given the choice, I would much rather not be wearing a pack, because a pack's also not comfortable. Even if you have an Usui and it's adjusted perfectly, it's still not as comfortable as not having a pack on. So given the choice, the only difference I would say is, like, there's some rides that you do that are really technical, and it's much easier to, like, get your camelback straw into your mouth than reach down, especially depending on your skill level. That's the only consideration I'd make. I would say I max out my bike water, and then I start looking at pack water, for me at least, in most situations.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I would say the only time I ever wear a pack is if I need to carry more water than I can.
Yes.
In my bottles, you know, and yeah, but that is a really, really interesting question, because
that's a good one. Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's like, in a way it's all kind of the same, but it's really not, you know, because, like, you do kind of adapt to your own body weight, and adding a pack is different than gaining that in muscle or something.
If the question was, I'm trying to go up Big Cottonwood Canyon as fast as possible, does a pound of water on my back versus on my bike make a difference? No. Like,
the answer is it's the same. Whichever
the physics are the same.
The physics are the same in that. Yeah. Yeah. Water on the bike versus water on the bike that's basically the same.
Yeah. The, like, practical answer, though.
Body weight versus bike weight.
Yeah.
That's kind of different.
Yeah.
You know, there's an argument to definitely lower your bike weight if you can. You know, it's not...
Oh, yeah. And yeah, we don't want to minimize that. And the other thing I do want to point out, anytime we talk about, like, weight and system weight and rider weight, is that ideally, like, there was that... Oh, I forget which pro. I think it was Johansson or someone who was in the polka dot jersey, where he said that he is a faster climber now that he's heavier because he has more muscle. So it's important to opposite. So, like, not all weight is the same on your body either. Mm-hmm. Like, don't be afraid to be a strong, powerful rider. Don't starve yourself.
Yeah, weight
isn't
everything.
Yeah, weight is not everything. Like, look at Pogacar. Mm-hmm. Does not look like, you know, like, Pogacar drops Romain Bardet. They look different. You know, so, yeah. Like, obviously lowering your weight in smart ways is always a win, but it's the catcher is in smart ways, and that's a very complicated thing.
And
so,
it's usually a byproduct of good training and good nutrition. It just kind of takes care of itself.
So. Yes.
But that's a fun question.
That's a really good question. Yeah. It's one I remember us talking about this a long time ago and trying to figure out, but yeah.
Yeah. So 100%. Basically, carry your body on your bike or on your body.
Carry your body on your bike. Would you say carry your body on your bike?
What did I say? Carry your water. Sorry.
Okay, carry your body on your bike for sure. If your body's not on your bike, that's called a crash.
Bad sign.
We don't like those.
Yeah, no, carry your water on your bike or your body, just depending on the circumstances. But I think it's probably the same from us.
Yeah, so if like max out your bike carrying capacity, then move on to a pack if need be.
Yeah.
There we go. Very cool.
Okay, that was fun.
That was the only question I had. Do you have any other questions this week?
You know, if I did, I forgot about them right now.
Oops, so. Nothing personal. We're just stupid. So.
Okay, so the topic. So I.
What? Nice smooth transition there, Dan. 10 out of 10. Okay. This is so well produced.
So tell a little story. So there was a professor that lived in kind of a small town. And he commuted a ways to the university that he worked at. And this professor kind of had like a unique personality. I think some people kind of took him as not social and a little grumpy. And the people in the town really didn't like him much. And it kind of got to a point where like anytime something bad happened in the town, they kind of blamed this guy. You know, he was just kind of mysterious and never came out. And a lot of kind of rumors started flying about this guy, and nobody really knew him too well or were too good of friends with him. And there was a kid that grew up in the town, and when he grew up and was adult, he had a child that became very, very ill and needed some treatment. And it turns out that the treatment required for this guy's child was developed by this professor that lived in that small town that nobody liked and all these rumors, and looked into it further and found out this guy also was donating lots of monies from his patents to the local hospital and anonymously helping people with medical bills and all kinds of good stuff. But nobody knew that, and he just kind of did it anonymously. All right. So lactate. Lactate is today's topic.
Okay, good. Can we just completely move on from that story and not address it at all?
Okay, we'll see if yeah, you'll see what that story has.
I wish
relevance.
We should film this, because I wish you could have seen my face when you were telling that story. I think it would be insanely funny if we just moved on from that and the topic had nothing to do with it.
Okay, the people listening are smart enough to see how that story will relate to the topic.
Is that a knock? Are you saying I'm not smart enough to understand how that works?
Apparently not yet.
No, because you said lactate. I think I get where you're going.
You think
with this.
You get where?
And okay. I think I'm assuming. So, really quick, that's not a true story. This is a.
I totally made that story.
Parable.
It's a parable. Yeah.
Okay.
In fact, it was funny. I was like Googling this morning, like stories about people that were misunderstood, and I was coming up with like how like Hitler was misunderstood and Napoleon.
The first 10 results are all Reddit, and you're like, oh no.
So I'm like, I better just make up a story.
That's not great. Historically misunderstood people, and it's just all blogs.
Yeah.
Blogs. No good sources.
So yeah. But yeah, okay. That was a story about someone that was misunderstood. And
that seems like, even for a story about someone who's misunderstood, that's still a weird story, but sure. Okay.
Okay. So we're talking about lactate.
Why did it have to be his kid? He grew up in the town and is a kid. Why are we adding a generation to this?
I was freestyling right there.
That sounded like an AI generated story. Like, why does it have to be his kid? Why can't he just go to the hospital?
Next time I tell it, I'll do it that way.
Okay.
I don't know. I thought it'd be more emotional if it was his kid.
Okay. Why not his grandkid then? Why not his puppy? Okay.
So yeah, so that was a story about someone that was misunderstood. So we're talking about lactate.
You Googling people who are misunderstood. 4chan, 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 4chan.
Okay. So lactate, as we all know, it was once considered to be the cause of like fatigue and the soreness that you got after exercise. And everyone called it lactic acid, right?
People who know a little bit about exercising will go on a run and say, oh, I feel that lactic acid.
And I think that, like, in the 90s, that was just what it was. Like, all the gym teachers and gym coaches would talk about lactic acid and how you have to, you know, recover to let all the lactic acid go away or whatever. And I think most people that are somewhat versed in exercise know that you really don't call it lactic acid anymore. And I think that people are doing a really, really good job of kind of getting the information out that was kind of a misunderstanding, that kind of a mischaracterization of lactic acid. Because the reality is there's really no such thing as lactic acid in the body. And so I guess, you know how every time I get ready for a podcast, it's like I always have an epiphany. And my epiphany was that I always knew that, like, lactate is what we actually call it. It's not a bad thing, but I didn't realize how it's like the opposite of a bad thing. It's not like a neutral thing.
We'd call that a good thing.
We call it a good thing. So
the word was on the tip of your tongue there.
And I think most people now kind of associate lactate as something that increases as your exercise intensity increases. And I think that I thought, and a lot of people thought, that too much of it eventually became a bad thing. And that's kind of true, but not necessarily true. And we'll get to that later. But yeah, lactate isn't neutral. It's actually a very, very good and useful substance in our body, and it's necessary. So first of all, it's a primary energy source for our mitochondria, but also it's actually a really powerful signaling molecule for our bodies to develop more mitochondria and stronger mitochondria. It's basically like a hormone that signals our bodies to adapt and create more mitochondria.
So if we maybe go back for just a sec, for some of us who, despite having been on 98% of these episodes and has talked about lactate before, what is lactate, and what, like, is, does it have to do with milk? Like, what, like,
okay, I'll explain what it is and where it comes from. It's similar to milk, but that's a different type of lactate.
Is this like, I've got this milk flowing through my legs that makes them hurt after I exercise? Like, it sounds made up. I don't.
Yeah. I think it's a similar molecule, but they are different. There's a distinction. I think one, I'd have to look it up. But
and it's like a thing that your body's making, right?
Yeah. And I'm going to explain that process in a second. Okay. But yeah. But it's not the same stuff that's in your milk. Mm, so
bummer.
So, yeah. So it's a signaling molecule that, that will help us create more mitochondria and better mitochondria. And it also... No, this might surprise you. It also helps regulate pH. It actually lowers and buffers acidity, which is completely the opposite.
Because you said lactic acid is a misnomer, that it's not actually an acid?
It's the opposite. Like, lactate actually helps reduce acidity in our bodies. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. That's like a complete, misunderstanding. That we've had until recently.
Okay.
Yeah. Actually lowers acidity, does not increase acidity. So there you go.
There you go.
Back to my story.
Your health teacher in the 90s is wrong. There we go.
So it's not an acid. When it's produced, it has a negative ion. And this is neutralized when it's combined with positive ions.
Okay.
So it's kind of a neutralizer. And our body has to really, really closely regulate our pH. You know, if it's too acidic or if it's too basic, we're going to shut down and die. You know, so that's something that our body really, really regulates closely. And lactate and bicarbonate are some of the mechanisms for the body doing that. And lactate is one of the things that helps neutralize acid in our body when it becomes too acidic. So this actually helps delay fatigue. So lactate helps delay fatigue for a couple of reasons. One is because it's a fuel source, and the other because it actually is helping to neutralize acid, which is completely different than I think what most people in the 90s or a lot of people that don't really study exercise,
what cool people would think it is.
Yeah. So you were asking, what is lactate? Okay, let's talk about it. So let's talk about metabolism. Basically, you know, I really wish I understood metabolism better, like the electron transport chain, the Krebs cycle. I am just in awe of the people that can like look through a microscope or whatever they do and make sense of that and understand it. And it's like, yay, science. I just wish I was smart enough to understand it. It's really, really complicated. But to try and make it simple is basically metabolism is, you know, you've got these fuel substrates, you're breaking off carbons from that, and it goes through a bunch of steps and it makes energy and we breathe out carbon dioxide. And that's kind of like...
Not dissimilar to what cars do, basically, right? Like you're burning carbon and there's a byproduct and you're getting energy out of it?
Yeah, that's true.
Okay.
So fat is one of those fuels. And fat is completely and only metabolized in the mitochondria. So if you have unhealthy mitochondria, you're not going to be good at metabolizing fat. And fat is also completely aerobic. You can't metabolize fat anaerobically. Okay. But carbohydrates are different. Similar, but they're different. Carbs are actually they're metabolized both aerobically and anaerobically. And a lot of times we kind of think that it's like two separate things, but it's actually simultaneously in a way. So initially carbs are metabolized outside of the mitochondria in the cytosol of the cell. They're metabolized there initially, and then after that, they're metabolized in the mitochondria aerobically. So at first, they're metabolized anaerobically in the cytosol, then they're metabolized aerobically in the mitochondria. And I know this is probably super boring, and you're nodding. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But absolutely.
This is so we can understand what lactate actually is. So what's happening, how this happens is, so glucose, the carbohydrate, is a chain of six carbons with six carbon molecules and six water molecules. And that's why, you know, if you've ever carb loaded, like for a race, don't weigh yourself before the race. You'll be scared because like when you carb load, you get really, really heavy because that glycogen is a lot of water.
Water's heavy.
It's really, yeah. So anaerobic glycolysis, it splits these carbons in half. So now you just have three. You have these three carbon molecules, and these two molecules are called pyruvate. Okay.
I still don't know what lactate is.
Okay, we're so
introduced
close.
Me to like nine new characters.
Okay, so the pyruvate aerobically it'll give off one of these carbons, and it'll metabolize that in the mitochondria aerobically and get some more energy.
Okay.
Okay. And so now you have two left over, and these two carbons are...
One of them's lactate?
Both of them are lactate together.
Yeah. What a twist. Real yeah. Shyamalan twist at the end of your thing.
Well, this
here.
Is kind of the twist, actually, because they used to think that this ended at pyruvate, and those two left over, the lactate, was a byproduct and a waste product, and it would just go in and cause problems. But turns out, those two leftover molecules, which are the lactate, actually can go back into the mitochondria and produce more energy. It can go into the blood, it can go to the local muscles and produce energy there. It can go into the bloodstream, and it's actually like the preferred back up.
No.
Preferred energy source for like the heart and the brain.
Hmm.
So it's a very, very valuable energy source because it's kind of like a partially digested or like energy source. So it's very, very efficient. The body can use it really, really readily. So it's not at all a waste product. It's something that's a very, very useful fuel source. It's a useful signaling molecule. It's very, very valuable. And something we've mentioned before when we talk about like fast and slow twitch muscles, just as a reminder, like our fast twitch muscles are more anaerobic, and so they're going to be producing more lactate. And our slow twitch muscles are more aerobic and have more mitochondria. So the slow twitch muscles are the ones that are able to utilize the lactate. And you know, if people have these systems well developed, it's going to make them a better athlete and a healthier individual. So
just to jump in, like where does this misunderstanding come from? Because you said like health teachers in the 90s would tell you that. Like, why did we collectively used to think it was this harmful byproduct that made your legs hurt?
Well, because like as your exercise intensity increases, so does lactate.
Uh-huh.
Right. But what else increases as your exercise intensity increases?
Sweat? Like what? I have no idea.
Well, like fatigue.
Oh, okay.
Fatigue, which is both central and peripheral. There's lots of other things that increase as your exercise intensity increases. And one of them, you know, there's fatigue, but another one is also acidity. You know, as your muscles contract and your intensity increases, your body produces more hydrogen ions, which is just kind of a fancy way of saying they become more acidic. That just happens because of exercise. And, you know, which we mentioned before, that the lactate actually kind of helps neutralize some of that acidity. But it's just kind of a classic case of causation versus correlation.
Mm.
You know, like, is your exercise intensity increases, so does lactate. But almost like these other things increase as well, you know, which cause fatigue, which cause burning in your muscles, which causes you to quit or, you know, to not be able to exercise. They increase at a similar rate. And so people just kind of always associate.
It's like they're there at the scene of the crime, but they're not
always
doing it. Yeah,
it's kind of like the fire, the example of like a, you know, every time there's a fire, there's the fire department there. So someone might think that the fire department is the cause of the fires, but
right.
really they're not. They're just there at the same time. And
that's what they want us to think.
Yeah. So it's more of a correlation rather than causation kind of thing. So this leads us to a really interesting question then.
Oh, finally. Just kidding. That was mean. This is all interesting.
Is it good or bad to have a lot of lactate in your system?
Everything I know about storytelling, like thematically, this feels like the moment where I'd say, well, yes, if you're saying it's a misconception that it's bad, it must be good. And we're all going to be injecting lactate into our legs in 2 months. Like what? I have no idea. I don't know. My gut says that this is like a trick question or something.
Okay. So being able to produce a lot of lactate is a good thing if you're able to utilize it is okay. kind of the key. You know, and that's why Tadej Pogačar is so fast, because he has a really, really good system of being able to utilize the lactate that his body produces. He's getting a lot of fuel out of that and being able to operate aerobically rather than anaerobically. And he's got really healthy mitochondria. So yeah, it's good to be able to produce a lot and utilize a lot.
Are we into lactate clearing? That's a thing I've heard people say that I haven't heard you say yet. Like, cause you said it's good if you can use it. What does it look like if you can't? Cause you say it's good if you can produce a lot of it and use it. But.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, yeah, lactate clearing or lactate utilization. I think that's interesting, and maybe we'll talk about that in a second, but that's just something that, as you train more and your mitochondria improve, you become better at clearing lactate. A lot of people do like over unders and whatever, because they say that improves lactate clearing, but what really improves lactate clearing is anything that's going to improve your mitochondrial health and also probably your slow twitch muscle fiber distribution. Those things are what's really going to be able to help you clear lactate, because you're going to have more more places for that lactate to go.
What happens if you don't? What happens if you are not Tadej Pogačar and you have a whole bunch of is this a not fit person who carbo loads and then does something really hard and they can't use the lactate? Like what does that look like?
Well yeah, and that's So basically, like, you know, we've talked about lactate testing and so forth, you know, and like you go in and you kind of start at a low intensity and you get to a point where your lactate kind of bumps up at one point, and that kind of indicates that you're starting to use more of your kind of mid twitch fibers and you're starting to use carbohydrates as a fuel more at that intensity. We consider that point zone two. And then, you know, as the intensity increases, there's another point where it kicks up. But at that point, it becomes kind of exponential and kind of just goes out of control. And that's kind of like what we consider like our lactate threshold. And basically, like, if you have excess lactate in the blood, the lactate itself isn't harmful. It's not harming you. It's not causing burning. It's not bad. But it is an indicator that your intensity has exceeded your mitochondria's ability to utilize the excess lactate. It's basically your intensity has exceeded your aerobic abilities.
Okay.
So.
And then like the clock's ticking on how long you can do that basically.
Yeah. And that's not necessarily because of the lactate. That's because of those other things that also increase as your intensity increases, you know, the hydrogen ions, the acidity, the central fatigue, the other things that increase at the same time, you know, cause there's more than one thing that's going to increase as your intensity increases, you know? So you asked like, if you're just sitting around and you have really, really high levels of lactate, that would probably be an indicator that, yeah, you're not very metabolically healthy. Hmm. Or, you know, or maybe you're not metabolically flexible, you know, like you're too carb dependent and or so forth, you know. So, and it's not that the lactate itself is bad. It's just kind of an indicator of what's going on inside you, you know. It's kind of like your heart rate isn't bad. but it's an indicator of what's going on inside, kind of thing. So, like, does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay. I like the heart rate indicator, because I'm just feel like, oh, well, every time you exercise too hard, your heart rate's really high. So we're gonna figure out ways to like lower your heart rate artificially. Like, it doesn't, you're just taking a marker.
Yeah, or it's like every time my heart rate's high, I'm tired. That means heart rate's bad. No, heart rate's very good.
Okay.
Yeah, kind of thing. So yeah, so lactate's just a good indicator of what your body's doing metabolically.
Got it.
So
are we to the part of the episode where I figure out what to do with this information?
Yeah, let's talk about it. So why is it useful? We mentioned it's a great way to kind of look under the hood to see what, you know, just it's a really good way to measure intensity. That's probably how it's most useful to us. What do we do with the information we're talking about today is probably something.
Is this just another idle curiosity? Dan was in the car too long and didn't have a new podcast thing, or like?
So if we're able to create a better mitochondrial network, more mitochondria, healthier mitochondria, we'll be able to produce more lactate, but utilize more lactate, which will improve our performance. And it's also going to improve our metabolism, and it's going to help us be more fatigue resistant. So being able to utilize lactate better equates to a faster bike rider.
Let me guess. The way I do this is ride a lot in zone two.
Well, actually, yeah. So,
all right, everyone. Thanks for listening. Great episode. See you next week.
Well, yeah. So low intensity, you know, when you're operating kind of that fat max we talked about before, your mitochondria are working, they're metabolizing like completely fat, and the cool thing about that is at that intensity, you can spend a whole heck of a lot of time with your mitochondria operating at that level, but you're experiencing very little fatigue. You know, so you're spending a lot of time improving your mitochondria, but you're not really fatiguing your body. So you can spend a lot of time there if you're doing it at the right intensity, which probably most people don't. So that's probably the biggest way is riding a lot at that intensity. But also, if you ride at the other end of your aerobic spectrum at your VO2 max, you know, that increase in lactate is signaling your body to create more mitochondria and to make your mitochondria function better. And so I guess the whole, like, if you really, really want to improve this is to train at all intensities, but train a lot of time at the consistent lower intensities, and then also really, really focus on VO2 max training. You know, and kind of the combination of those two things is what's really going to make it so you can have better lactate clearing, you know, and by lactate clearing, you're really just using lactate as a benefit, not just something that's just getting pumped into your blood. You're actually being able to utilize it as an additional fuel source. And that just comes, you know, it's just kind of another plug for polarized training, you know, doing lots of relatively easy training and some training that's really, really hard, and the right mixture of that will make you faster, you know. But, you know, that same advice could be given about a lot of different topics, you know. But yeah, just training in general, like even moderate training is really going to help this as well. Like pretty much any training you do, and also good nutrition, good sleep, and all, it's all going to help improve this. So yeah, so basically ride more.
All boils down to that.
And recover, you know, because that's when the magic happens. But yeah.
Huh. No, I mean, that is an interesting lesson, and like, it's, I think maybe the conventional non-exercise science obsessed, like, misconceptions that you get from some of these people.
But don't ever finish a hard ride and complain about all the lactic acid in your legs. That's not,
Yeah, never do that. Don't you dare.
It's not a good look these days, so.
It's not a good look to who? To you and the four other people who have read up on this? Interesting stuff.
No, I think this is pretty common knowledge now.
I don't think it is, but it's adorable that you think that. Wow, is that all she wrote?
I guess so.
There you go. This is the shortest episode we've done in a minute.
It kind of is. I didn't want to make it too boring.
Oh, I have bad news. Well, it's good stuff. I will say, as a finishing plug, send us more questions. I think
that was fun. I thought Josh's question was kind of fun.
We really don't get that many questions. There was a time when I'd get like 8 a week, and I think we've kind of have this wrap of like,
or sometimes I get them and I just forget about them, which
yeah,
is bad.
Yeah. And yeah. So like, it's like, send us more questions for sure. I think especially
and
like,
topic suggestions.
Yeah. I mean, we're going on like 3 years of this. Like there's only so many things. If there's other stuff we can hit,
if there's like different ways we can tell you to ride more and sometimes ride hard and sometimes ride easy, we'd like to know about them.
Yeah. Well, good stuff, guys. What is our secret? Is it professor? I don't know. What is it like? Convoluted, insane story.
Misunderstood. We could just say misunderstood professor.
Misunderstood professor is your secret word this week. Sean, I look forward to your text. Everybody ride safe this week, and we will talk to you soon.